But anyway, webcomics.
Right. Yes, let's dive right into that. Okay.
I'm fast.
Okay, let's get started.
News and commentary on the Webcomic Beacon newscast.
Welcome one and all to the Webcomic Beacon newscast. This is episode 27, the newscast for July 3rd, 2011. I'm your host, Ross Scott. You can find my stuff at The System, which is systemcomic.com. There's comics and, well, that's about it. Also with us today are my lovely co-host, the amazing Alex of Alex's Guide, which can be found at alexsguide.net. Hi, Alex.
Hi, Ross.
Hi.
How's it going?
Not bad. So you were saying that you've been up since when?
I've been up since...
I'm just amazed by this, that people live
like
this.
Yeah, I've been up since 8 or so last night. Usually this is bedtime, but I stay up late for the newscast and the probecast when it happens.
10:45 in the morning. It's late.
Yeah.
Yep. I hear you.
It's pretty much exactly the opposite. It's 10:45 at night.
Of normal people.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. And also with us today, speaking of not normal people, is Adam Smithy of webcomichell.com.
Good morning.
Good morning. And where
I am,
what part of the country are you in there? Because I know I got an email from you at 6 a.m., which really made me wonder about where the heck you are.
Oh, I'm like an hour away from Alex.
Yeah.
I'm also a third shifter, though, so I've been up since 9 o'clock last night.
I mean, not what country. What state are you in?
Ohio.
You're both Ohio? Wow. Okay. Do they have Steak and Shakes out where you are?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, we do.
I missed
it. We also have Waffle House, which is...
I love Waffle House. I miss it so. Anyway, we should probably start talking about comics, huh?
So anyway, webcomics,
right. So here in the Webcomic Beacon newscast, for those that are just tuning in for the first time, we try and cover whatever news has happened throughout the week that applies to webcomics or affects webcomics as best we can. But we always want your help. So if you hear anything that you'd like to discuss or you find any tips or articles throughout the week that you want us to talk about, send them on over to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. And with that, we will go into our first story. We're going to start a little out of order with a discussion about a recent kind of pseudo meme that's been happening on a bunch of webcomic sites due to a bunch of female artists getting together. It's a thing called Strong Female Characters. And my phone just texted me. It's a thing called Strong Female Characters, which has somehow involved three girl characters that all are very skinnily clad. And acting very, what's the word I'm looking for? Stereotypically, of you know, being these kind of women characters. So, you guys have seen this a little bit, I'm guessing, throughout the internetverse, the interverse, and maybe the characters' names, right? Because these are great. Georgia O'Keeffe.
They're so great.
Queen Eliza Tits. Is that it? Is that how you pronounce it?
Elizatits. Yeah.
Elizatits, right, of course. And Susan B. Astony. And they're all drawn, you know, facing you so you can see their butt and their boobs at the same time. And they're created by Kate Beaton, Meredith Grant, and Carly Minardo. And why exactly? I mean, so it's a backlash to the whole we want to start having strong female characters in the DC Comics universe reboot thing, and how all the strong female characters tend to pretty much be the same as they were before. So let's start with just a vague question of what do you guys think of this whole kind of movement scene meme thing?
I love their names. My favorite was Georgia O'Keeffe.
I grimaced at that one. A little bit of grimacing.
I would personally like to apologize for my fellow webcomicers.
Really? Why?
I don't know. It's I'm all for the memes, but this one seems kind of lame. It's maybe I haven't seen the right comics for it, but the couple of times that I've seen it pop up, you know, it just seems like I completely agree with their point about DC, and I am personally dreading this upcoming reimagining because it's not a reboot. Oh, God, don't call it a reboot. They freak out.
I love that show. Reboot? Hmm? Oh, nothing.
I don't know. I think it's look at me here. I'm the one playing it safe. That's bizarre. That's unusual.
No, well let's start with this. Okay. It's totally sexist. I mean, it's jokingly sexist, which is the idea.
Oh, yeah.
It's like the Black Dynamite of women exploitation. And the question, let's start with this. If it was drawn by men and not women, would it A, have taken off, and B, seemed more offensive?
It may have seemed a little more offensive. I think it's so campy and over the top that if it had been drawn by a group of men as it is, I don't think people would necessarily take it seriously, but I could definitely see how a male creator behind this would have a lot more backlash.
Mm-hmm.
I had a thought and it just went away.
I love all the fan art. There's so much fan art.
I kind of wanted to point out, it's like anything that Kate Beaton and Meredith Grand touch just turns to gold. So, I mean, I kind of attribute it to the memification to that.
Yeah.
Since it's not saying anything terribly new. But it's still funny.
Now, it has gotten to be kind of a joke on a joke on a joke at this point. I mean, there's fan art for this thing that's a parody of other things. I mean, it's getting so far removed from kind of its original source. Does it start to become more offensive once everyone else starts drawing it?
Maybe that's the reason that it's bugging me. It's not, I mean, I'm fine with the original idea, but I'm also seeing, you know, the place where it's so far removed from the original that people have no idea what it is they're looking at anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just gets weird at that point.
Right.
I don't know. It's the fact that it's as limited in scope to who can participate in it without it being creepy and weird.
I don't know. Jeff Jobs drew something for it, didn't he? I mean, I know he was talking about it on his Tumblr.
I'd feel uncomfortable doing fan art or something for one of these. And I've given into the whole My Little Pony thing. So I guess I guess it's, you know, and this is also me, creator of Gayzilla, saying that. I don't know. I'm just...
We're going to start introducing you that way on the show. Creator of Gayzilla.
Yeah, creator of Gayzilla, who's hiding from his own creation at this point.
Adam Gayzilla Smithy.
The comics that Carly posted over at from worryingblender.com, the kind of three in a set that's been making the rounds, and it's in the article that we linked on the site. It's pretty funny. I mean, they're all pretty funny, I gotta say. I love when the girl gets shot and then she's just on the ground moaning for chocolate. So funny.
Menstrual Raiders.
Okay. Well, okay, let me ask one more follow-up question. What is a good example of strong female characters, then? If this is the stereotype of bad ones, what's the example of good ones? Lots of typing.
Sorry, the links aren't showing up in the chat room.
Okay.
Oh, well.
So,
I don't know. It's kind of hard to find... It's kind of hard to think of a good, strong, non-stereotypically bad female character, and that's sort of horrible.
Do you think you maybe just don't even notice them? when they're
happening? I think if I don't, that's a credit to how well written they are, because it shouldn't stand out. It shouldn't have to stand out as a strong female character. It should be a strong character that's also female.
Okay.
It should be a passive part of the character instead of it being, you know, look at me, I've got boobs.
Alex?
It's kind of like there's this Joss Whedon quote of, you know, he gets asked in some interview or something, well, why do you write all these strong female characters? And his answer is, because people still ask me that question.
Ooh. Oh, that's deep. Okay. That's deep. Well, yeah, I was trying to think of some good strong female characters. Okay, let's narrow it down. Just in the webcomics world, okay, just limiting it to webcomics. You've got, how about Girl Genius? There's some good strong female characters in that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Maybe a bunch from Questionable Content. You got some there. The female stick figures from XKCD, maybe?
Yeah, usually those are pretty strong. But then there again you go, the sex on those could easily just be juxtaposed back the other way around, and
true,
it wouldn't matter.
Yep.
Because, you know, that's how well written they are, that it's not about... It's sort of like a one character. What was the test that they did the big Beacon episode on?
The Bechdel test.
Yeah, it's sort of like a one character that if you can read the dialogue and you don't even have to go, oh, this is a woman speaking this. You know, that to me, that is a good written character, a well written character. My English fails.
But you, I mean, it's not that she shouldn't be female, though, right? I mean, strong female characters should be female. I mean, they're not male. That's the point. I mean, they don't have to mention that in every sentence or in every word, but they should, in fact, be females. Right?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, you shouldn't be blind to gender when writing characters, but at the same time, you know, you want to make sure you're not tokenizing.
All right. Well, we're always willing to continue the discussion, but we've got a lot of other news articles to go through. So we'll move right along to an article posted over on Newsarama, which is an interview from their kind of continuing segment, The Wide World of Webcomics, which is a name I totally wanted to use for something at one point. But The Wide World of Webcomics...
Was that the name of your old podcast?
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, it was The Wonderful World of Webcomics.
Oh, yeah.
But I was a big fan of the alliteration, so... Anyway, there's an article, it's an interview with Phil Folio about how Girl Genius came to be, starting back in 1993, they go through it. Some interesting tidbits in there about kind of being independent and how long he's been doing it and where it's going next and all that kind of stuff. But one key question of note is, how do you keep up with new avenues of distribution, and what do you feel is the biggest mistake most creators and larger companies make when dealing with electronic distribution? And Folio says, actually, I really think we're dropping the ball on this. We already should have iPad apps, but we're too damn busy to do all the work that's required on our end. I guess if I have an opinion about it, I'd say I don't get too cranked about the money part of it. The thing you want is people reading your work, and as a webcomic, you're already giving that away for nothing. Don't let people rip you off, but don't ask for the moon. Yeah. So, Alex, any thoughts on that?
That's good advice.
All right, then.
I kind of want the moon.
I kind of want the moon, too. Okay, well, we'll move right into... Damn. Okay, we'll move into the next article. Robert Koo of Penny Arcade fame was interviewed on GeekWire, and they have kind of a breakdown of it over on GeekWire's site, geekwire.com. By the way, this and all the links we talk about in the show today will all be featured on the newscast posts, and those of you in the chat room. I know, Alex, you're still posting them into the chat room, right?
Well,
is it working?
I don't think it's working. I think Fess usually puts me as a moderator.
Oh, I can do that.
In which you can put links in and they won't get redacted.
We'll handle that later. 'Cause I'm just lucky everything's working right now. At least I think it is. So we'll just keep going. Okay, well, so they do a pretty interesting interview. There were some interesting tidbits. Did you guys see anything in there that was really caught your eye?
Well, most of it's in the form of an audio podcast. So
right. Well, I guess one thing they talked about that was pretty interesting was the user base, where they talk about whether or not Penny Arcade is mainstream. So first of all, do you guys think Penny Arcade is mainstream?
Yes.
Why?
When they made a special comic which was featured predominantly for the release of Fallout 3,
yeah,
that's when I was like, okay, yeah, these guys have officially, I mean, I won't say that they're like wide mainstream.
Right.
They're not like, you know, having their own cartoon on Fox or anything like that, but they have a sufficient enough diversity to their thing that people go to Penny Arcade not to even read the comic, but to read the blog and the articles and to get news and stuff like that.
Right.
They've broken out of the box that most webcomics live in and have hit enough other related boxes that they have a shallow but a very wide footprint.
I think they've almost created boxes in their wake more than anything. I mean, they did a lot of trailblazing, and then other people looked at it and said, well, if they do it this way, maybe I can do it this way too.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yeah.
That's a problem sometimes.
True story.
Especially when they're not smart enough to not name their own characters Gabe and Tycho, because I've seen that like 3 times so far.
Seriously? People are naming their own characters Gabe and Tycho?
Yes. Oh, yes, I have. Yep.
Anyway,
I weep.
It's a pretty good article where they talk about the business model. Honestly, I think it's a lot of the same content that's been covered about a million times whenever someone interviews Penny Arcade. So if you just read any Penny Arcade interview with Robert Koo, and you're good. Moving on, quickly noted, there is a new DC Comics app for the Zune Windows Marketplace store. And it's obviously separate from Comixology, which might imply something. I mostly mention this so we can play the webcomics newscast beacon drinking game. So we mentioned Comixology, and everyone can take a drink, and now we can move on.
Honestly, I think the real story here is that Zune still exists.
Fact.
Dude, right?
Dude, right. Exactly. Oh, there's a t-shirt I need to make.
Like, dude, right?
Hey.
When did Zune get their own web store? When did that happen?
Well, it's the Windows mobile store.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah,
in the same way the Android store. Right. Anyway, we'll move right along to this business article found over at GigaOM. It's called You're a Brand Now, where they talk about, now they're talking about journalism and how people coming out of journalism school are being told, you know, you have to brand yourself and all this stuff around it. And there's some kind of kickback from people that are in the industry on whether or not you should be doing that or should have to do that. Now, what do you guys think about branding yourself? Now, obviously we're not journalists. I mean, well, we're kind of being journalists right now. We're pretending. I have my press hat on, metaphorically.
No, you don't. We can actually
metaphorically
see you on the chat.
My metaphorical press hat. I'll go get it. It's just out of reach. But you know, we kind of have our press hat on. But no, my point is, as webcomic people, I mean, do you think, obviously we brand our comics, you know, we have mastheads and ways that we handle things, but do you think we have to also brand ourselves? Do you think people follow us as people as much as they do our comics?
Yes. And I can tell you exactly why, and I actually have my example here.
Good. It's almost like you're prepared.
A couple of nights ago on Twitter, Alex was complaining about the fact that for the upcoming convention, they still have her listed as being the person actively making Garanos.
Yeah. Wait, this is Kineticon, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. They still have me listed as a guest, and I'm not
right.
going to be
so
there.
Oh, that's part of the...
No, I'm not. They also have... They don't have Art Fight listed, and they do have comics that don't exist from Art Fight people listed. It's right. Yeah, they ported over the bio from 2 years ago, but that's not
the
point.
They updated my bio, thankfully.
Oh, okay. Sorry, go ahead, Adam.
The thing is, you know, I'm pretty much calling it quits on the Apple of Discord. That's why we're going with webcomichell.com now, because that's my new comic.
Right.
I've mostly put the Apple of Discord to bed, but, you know, I'm known for the Apple of Discord. If I ever got invites to conventions or anything, initially it would be for the Apple of Discord. And so facing the fact that I've now ended the only thing that people really knew me for,
right,
I came to the realization that I need to be the draw. It needs to be the thing by me instead of the thing by me. Because that's, projects don't last. I mean, not everyone is going to be doing the same comic, the same blog, the same TV series, right, the same novel, the same podcast for the next 20 years.
I think what happens with webcomics is, you're known as your first project until you have more than one, or until you have two projects. The minute you have two projects, I think you have shown a versatility that makes people step back and look at you as a person and not just one project. Does that make sense? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. I think I'll be known as, I think in a lot of circles, I'm just known as the guy that does the system, and that's totally fine. But to anyone knows that I do the system and Art Fight and, you know, this right here, this thing we're doing, you know, the minute there's three things, it's like, oh, well, the only central element there is this one person. And so then there's an element of following one person as opposed to just following one project. No?
Yeah, I definitely...
Too heady for this early in the morning? Sorry.
I definitely feel that, because since Garanos and Alex's Guide didn't overlap at all, I took a big hit on my readers.
Right.
And once Garanos ended, it was 2 months until I started the new comic, so most of them had probably, you know, have never gone back to the website again.
Yeah, they scampered off, absconded, yes.
And it's unfortunate that it happened that way, but,
right,
you know.
Mm-hmm. Now,
I've got plenty of time.
How much do you have your own personalities, you know, kind of at the forefront of what you do?
Well, now that I'm doing an autobiographical comic, it's pretty much 100%.
Right. You know, yes.
My personality has always been a part of my personal branding.
You know, I've noticed Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
But, you know, it didn't show up as much when I was doing this fantasy comic, but, you know, it's been a little bit freeing to be able to be like silly and snarky now that I don't have this serious comic.
I gotta say, I'm a big fan of the new comic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I never got that into Garanos. Sorry, but
okay.
I really like Alex's Guide. I think it's a lot of fun. I think your personality comes through it, and I think that's great. And I know we've talked in the past about, you know, it's not always your first project that makes a name for yourself. Generally, the first project's a lot of learning and training wheels and stuff. But, you know, I think sometimes that's another part of it, is the second project is where, or later projects, where your personality comes through more and what people respond to more.
Maybe it's not just your first project, but it's your first project to go big. You're I'm going to be...
Garanos was not my first webcomic.
Right.
Yeah.
Will you dare you give out the name of your first webcomic?
I'm glad I'm not the Jigworthy Lady.
I like the name Jigworthy.
What? I don't even know what
that is. A great name, but yeah, my first webcomic was the comic everybody tells you not to make. It scared all my friends, and it was all inside jokes.
Yeah, I think we've all been there.
Yeah.
And then after making Garanos, you have essentially gone back to doing this same thing, but
it's
better
this time.
Yeah. It's different, but better. And that's what counts.
Different and better.
There you go.
I'm a little older. I'm a little wiser.
Yeah. So anyway, this article that we started with basically says that everyone's a brand now and it's not going anywhere anytime soon. I think that's pretty true, and it's something to consider, those of you out there who are looking to make a name for yourself, and how you want to do that. One piece of advice...
I think it's something to consider even if you're not looking to make a name for yourself. I know that this is a big issue that a lot of people have been facing. Like, when you go out to apply for a job, one of the first things that they do before the background, before the ink is dry on the background check,
right?
You know, the HR department has already pulled up your Facebook because they want to see what you say, what you do.
This is why I started having a two-page resume. The first page is my resume, and the second page is everything you are going to find when you Google me. and I make a big I have a whole like list of all the projects because, you know, when I go to get a job for teaching, they should probably know that I, you know, do this podcast and comics and stuff. And for the most part, they like it, you know, but I figure we might as well get out there fast. Anyway, we should probably move on. Got other stories to get to. But for those of you that want to discuss this kind of thing, go on over to webcastbeacon.com. It's our website. There's a post for this very podcast, and we would love to continue the discussion there. Right now, the only comments on the most recent couple newscasts is my mom. So please join her and talk about the show. I'm not kidding. Please. It's actually my mother. That people really think that, like, maybe I'm doing it or it's some joke. No, really. My mom does that, and then she writes me an email and comments on every single post.
She writes you an email telling you that she did that.
And then whenever I link to it, she comments on wherever I link to it. And then she calls me and tells me she did all of those things.
So she's listening right now?
Hi, Ross, listening.
That's Mom.
She really is listening right now. It's true. Yeah. It's funny.
And she ships out your merchandise.
She's well branded. Oh, yeah. She does that too. So she's actually very well branded. Speaking of which, she's Ross Mom everywhere.
She needs her own Twitter account.
Oh, my gosh. I don't dare give her Twitter. Are you kidding? I don't know what she'd do with it. I would give it to her, but then I'm going to have to explain it to her. And that's the issue. Okay, well, we'll move on. If you want to see Ross Mom have a Twitter account, let me know. You out there listening to the show. Actually, let me know on Twitter, speaking of which, at Ross Scott, RossCott. I would love to hear from you guys. We'll move on to the next article. Saturday morning breakfast cereal done by Zach Wiener. It is Wiener, I asked him. Is looking to raise money to do a series of new shows. Now, they didn't ask for any money when they put up SMBC Theater, which was about a year ago now. Maybe, no, 2 years ago.
Like 2 years ago, yeah.
They didn't ask for any money then, and now they're asking for money to start some series. And so their take on it is, well, we didn't ask for anything at first. We gave you all this stuff for free. Now we want to start taking it seriously, and we know what we'd spend money on now, so please come help us out. They were asking to raise $15,000. They still have 41 days to go, and they've already raised $25,000.
God.
So they're doing just fine. That's anytime I see comics like this succeeding on Kickstarter, I'm like, they're going to be fine. Good for them. I'm going to go over here to my corner
and cry.
And cry. No, that's great. It's great to see that.
Yeah.
It really is. So, you know, how were they able to make this such a success? I think they're like, let's dissect it for just a brief second. I think, first of all, they've got a very big built-in reader base, you know, and viewer base. I mean, SMBC did, and then SMBC Theater found its own kind of install base, and now, you know, they say to all those audiences, hey, this thing that you already like, please help support it through this. And I think that was definitely a very helpful thing. They also, in terms of what they offer through the Kickstarter, it's very clear, it's very well set forth. It's pretty obvious what you're going to get with it. And they can offer you things like the DVDs of the first season of SMBC Theater because it's already done. So that's all pretty cool. And the video is funny. So if you get a chance, check it out. But if you're going to support them, you know, they're fine. Why not support us here at the Webcomic Beacon? We could use your help. Please. So, any other thoughts on that? Because we'll just move on to the next one. No?
I like how one of the reward levels is a signed copy of the DVD and our lust.
Yes, you can buy their lust.
For $25 or more.
Yeah, it's cheap lust. That's always good. By the way, the first show that they're going to be doing, there's three web series that they're working on. The first one's called Space Opera, which I think is a pretty cool name for it. So there you go. Now, speaking of Kickstarter, Publishers Weekly has yet another article on Kickstarter where they basically go through a bunch of professional comics people and their successful and unsuccessful projects. The only thing that I really want to mention of this is one of the ones that was unsuccessful, where the guy was trying to raise money for, quote, Facebook ads, banner ads, black and white preview books, posters, flyers, and convention expenses. Like, the only thing that wasn't in there was groceries. I was just amazed. Like, it's not a project at that point. It's a promotional campaign as opposed to a thing.
That's rent.
And there's something to be said for that. I don't know. So that one was unsuccessful. Shock. Meanwhile, they linked to a bunch of successful ones and professional artists using it, and they break down the whole, ooh, it's crazy that people are raising money. Drink. I don't know. I feel like we've talked about this stuff enough. Let's move on. So, Diary of a Wimpy Kid, for those of you that have read that, there's a breakdown over on Robot 6 of how it's been free on the site since launching in the first place. I didn't realize that it started as part of funbrain.com. Probably because I didn't need arithmetic help in the last 10 years, but...
Probably not.
Yeah. So, for those of you that are curious about that, go check out that article. Also, in brief, we have a reader survey completed by Mia Wiesner that talks about the expectations readers have of digital comics. Out of 441 people surveyed, 91% would read digital comics. 45% have purchased digital comics. 27% may do so. 19% never will. The genres they're most likely to read, in order from first to last: science fiction, humor / comedy. What's the difference between humor and comedy? Anyone? Okay. Anyway, fantasy, then superhero, then crime / mystery. The least appealing aspects of it being not actually owning it, the DRM, lack of physicality, file format incompatibility, and the need to repurchase if the file gets damaged. So,
which, as we're moving towards cloud-based services anyway, some of that DRM and repurchasing stuff is going to be going away in the next couple of years.
We can only hope. So that's over on Fleen's website if you want to go check it out and follow the 10 links in every Fleen post.
Fleen!
Enjoy.
Sorry, it's just a neat word to say.
Fleen? Oh, yeah.
Fleen!
Fleen! So,
you kind of sound like you're whining it.
Fleen! Fleen! Now, we're going to skip right past two articles that will probably wind up in the links, which are about antitrust suits with Google and Twitter. But I will say, the Twitter one has a really funny image of a cop with a grenade launcher, and I have no idea why that is the video or that is the photo under a Twitter is under federal investigation article, because you know it's probably like just like the nerdiest guy just actually investigating them, as opposed to this badass cop who looks like he's not taking no for an answer. So we'll skip right past those. Some quick news on net neutrality. Net neutrality is going, and a law is finally coming from the SEC about net neutrality. It does not cover mobile, and the rules are kind of slowly working their way through the systems, and there's an article on GigaOM all about it. Now, for those of you that don't know about net neutrality, well, let's start with here on the show. Do you guys know about net neutrality?
I read up about it a couple of years ago when it started being a big thing, but it's kind of, I think they sort of wanted everyone to forget about it.
I'll say this. Net neutrality is really important to anyone who has a website or follows small websites on the internet, because the idea of it is, without net neutrality, if the net is not neutral, then certain internet providers like Comcast or Cox Cable or Roadrunner or Verizon or whatever you use could start slowing websites that don't pay them extra money, or maybe not even letting you access to certain sites at all.
Mm.
So that is why you should care. You should definitely care.
Bullshit.
So look into it and support it and read the articles on it. But again, we've got other things to talk about here on the show. So next we, well, I think we should probably, this is probably a good time for a break, don't you think? Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll do that. I'll try and fix the chat room, and all of us will be right back in a minute. So for those of you that are listening at home, live, and streaming, stay tuned. And for those of you that are listening to the recorded show, we will probably insert some sort of ad or song or something, or possibly an outtake of us doing our impressions of Fess. We'll see you in a minute, whatever winds up there, but we hope you enjoy it, and we will be right back. Boop.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Okay, so who wants to do their impression of Fess?
Adam hasn't done his yet.
Well, I did my... So anyway, webcomics...
Is that supposed to be Fess?
Says that all the time whenever I'm on the show because I have a tendency to cause tangential discussions, and then he tries to rein it back in by going, so anyway, webcomics.
Okay.
You can just tell he's just trying to
I can't.
My Fess cackle.
That was pretty good Fess cackle. See, I was thinking more along the lines of out of nowhere, just like, well, actually, over at the webcastbeacon.com, you'll find the... No, I can't think of anything fessy to say.
Okay. You're too quiet on your mic.
What did you guys have for breakfast? Okay, allow links. Here we go.
No, I know that it happened in the comic, but it still isn't canon.
That sounds like Fess. Okay, there we go. I think we're good now. I've allowed links. Alex, you want to test that theory?
It wasn't a continuity reboot.
Yay!
Yay!
And what a link to share.
Speaking of that, did you guys see the latest Ardra?
No.
Which has Fess in it.
What is Ardra?
A bad friend.
Should I know what Ardra is? I feel like I should, and yet I don't.
It's written by friend of the show, Jason. Fess did the art for it for a long time. He now manages the comic, basically. And he's currently appearing in his real-world persona in the most recent comic,
where
he's creepy.
That sounds like
Fess. It's beautiful.
Well, now I have to go see it.
Oh, thanks for the link. Okay, we should probably get back to that show we're doing. Remember that?
That show?
Yeah, we should probably get back to that.
Yeah. The one where we show with the show.
What are you talking about?
That does kind of look like Fess, actually.
That well, it is. I mean, that's...
Why is there a mouse on his shoulder?
He has a, like... In PSI, the main characters are Fess and a... And Ernest, who is like a human-sized furry rat character. And they're making fun of that there.
Self-referential humor, everybody.
Yeah.
Yay!
Yeah, this is a self-referential turducken at this point. Because it's like... It's a reference wrapped around a reference, wrapped around a couple of other references.
It's the inception of turduckens. Okay.
Turducken.
Well, let's move on. Let's bring it back to the show, shall we? Okay. Hey, one and all, welcome back. Here we are at the Webcast Beacon, Webcomic Beacon Newscast. I'm your host, Roscott. We will move on through all the stories of this week. The next one being another wonderful tutorial from Lackadaisy. I gotta say, we posted the facial expressions tutorial a while back. It was amazing. And now this other one's up of, what is this? How do you describe
consistent it? Consistent characters.
Consistent characters, yeah.
Yeah.
And construction of people. Oh, it's beautiful. It just makes me sad of how I draw, really. But, oh, it's pretty. Yeah, I had fun reading through it, I gotta say.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the really ugly Pikachu kind of thing near the end is worth
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
For that alone.
And he throws in a good Rob Liefeld joke.
Right. Well, we'll get more back to Liefeld later.
Oh, it's coming.
Oh, yeah. So, with that, we'll move to the next story. There's a ton of DeviantArt tutorials, too many to list. Too many to go through them all, I should say. There's ones on flash animation, fade effects, human figures, light and shadows, skin, how to draw men, upper bodies, ponies, kissing ponies, shiny hair, folds, wrinkles, and folds, wrinkles on men who are kissing ponies. So check all those out. There will be links over at the newscast. And they're all linked to DeviantArt. Who is Eric really going through this much DeviantArt with his downtime?
Apparently.
It's addictive. Once you it's so easy to hop from one account to another. It's a very cross-connected community there full of llamas and other weird stuff.
Right.
I broke up with DeviantArt about 8 months ago. I'm considering going back.
Okay, so here's another article for discussion. Or news for discussion, I guess I should say. So we found news of this over on Fleen, but the original source is actually from Twitter. So there's two guys, Christopher Butcher, who does comics212.net, and Jim Zubkovich, who does skullkickers.com. The book called Skull Kickers, apparently. And Comics 212, Chris was saying, it's kind of amazing how little interaction the webcomics half of my Twitter feed has with the mainstream comics half and vice versa. To which Zubkovich responded, webcomic folk aren't even curious about the strange comixology troops scouting the blasted barren lands of pay for contentia. So, he's on the professional, mainstream comic side of things, and he doesn't think that webcomics people care about such things. So, my question is this. Who else wants to punch this guy in the face? Okay, how about this? Why do you think that there is not much overlap between the two? Because I gotta say, I don't think that there is. And the question is, why?
I think it's because if webcomics could pull off the pay content thing consistently, someone would have done it by now. There have been a lot of comics that have tried. I mean, just think about how much crap started flying around when they put up the paywall over at, was it webcomics.com, the big thing. They put up the paywall between the readers and a bunch of the content. And right. Now imagine that being applied on a grand scale. I think one of the reasons why we've shied away from the pay for content is we've seen a number of people try and fail horribly at all sorts of different things related to that. And I mean, if I can't get people to, if I have as much trouble getting people to, read my comic as I do, I'm not sure people are going to pay for my comic either.
Right. Yeah. Now, I think webcomics people are more than willing to talk to the mainstream comics people. I think it's more the other way around. I don't think mainstream comics people want to talk to webcomics peeps.
Oh, they do when they need us for something.
When do they need us for something?
When they're looking to abduct one of our own to elevate them, to feed them the pay Comic Ambrosia and elevate them to godlike status and take them away from us.
See, I think it's a matter of I don't think there's the same levels of professionalism. I mean, I love webcomics, I really do, but our level of standards is non-existent. I mean, because it's so easy to be a webcomic, and that's the joy of it, but also you get a lot of crap thrown in there too.
Oh yeah, it's
and I don't think I think that approach and that fact of the matter means that as a group, people think of the crap in the group as much as they think of the good stuff, and they don't want to be associated with that.
Just look at Sprite Comics.
Can we not look at Sprite Comics? Is that enough?
See, there you go. Look at your attitude right there. There are good Sprite Comics. I mean, 8-Bit Theater.
Yeah, and there's a guy that's made the transition to print comics.
Right, but there are good Sprite Comics. There are not many, but there are good Sprite Comics. But the field is so riddled with bad Sprite comics that when you say, look at Sprite Comics, you get responses like, do we have to? Do we really have to? Because it's... That is exactly the point you were just making.
Well, speaking of Sprite Comics, why don't we go straight into this article on fair use, which even involves 8-bit artwork. So for those of you guys, so have you guys heard A Kind of Bloop? The article?
No, not before I read about it today.
Well, okay, so they took Miles Davis's A Kind of Blue, right? And then they set it to 8-bit music. Sounds kind of like this. Just to give you a sense. This is the track All Blues. This is the great thing about this podcast setup is I can do things like this. Here, I'll skip a bit to where the actual... Yeah. So this is, you know, old school jazz with a new school take. And for their album artwork, I'll turn that down. For their album artwork, and turn it off, hell, before I get sued. So the album artwork is a parody of the original album cover done in 8-bit. And after a whole lot of law issues, they settled for a large sum of money, which was kind of... I gotta say, kind of upsetting to see that they had to settle. But he does make the point on his own site over at waxy.org. Andy Bao is kind of the force behind Kickstarter and also A Kind of Bloop, which was, I think, his baby pretty much to start. He wound up paying $32,000 to the original artist to settle, but he doesn't think he's wrong. He believes he's in the right, but... some point you do just have to cut your losses and move on.
Yeah, as you said, that was the cheapest option for him.
Right.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's become a very common thing with a lot of different lawsuits nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
A company doesn't have to be right. They just have to have more money than the person that they're suing.
Yeah, I think that's a large part of it. I think Andy's got, you know, lawyers behind him. I think he could have fought it. I just think he didn't want to drag it out anymore. Unfortunately. Well, fortunately. Well, whichever way you look at it, I guess. But, you know, they go through a lot of the details on the site. I mean, this kind of thing has come up before plenty of times in plenty of different ways. And it is a hard thing to look at. I mean, they make the point over at Waxy about the Obama photo that led to the Hope poster that Shepard Fairey did. And that wound up being a settlement because it's so obviously based on that original photo.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's different than fair use, though. I mean, a lot of the times when people use fair use, they're claiming it because it's a parody of it.
Right.
The Shepard Fairey thing was not a parody of Obama. It was a derivative work off of the original.
Well,
so that's a different application of the same principle.
I think it was also not deemed transformative enough. Of the source material.
Okay.
I can see that too.
But 8-bit artwork based on the original, should that be?
It depends entirely on how the person uses it.
Okay. So,
I mean, okay, for instance, let's take classic Bob and George. Okay. Right?
Right. Sprite comic.
When they were doing the straight out parodies of the original Mega Man games, mm-hmm. I believe at that point they were completely covered in fair use. They were parodying the original source material. They were doing it in kind with the same materials as it, but they were clearly making it a statement about their opinions about the original source material. When they then spun that out and continued to use the Mega Man sprites as more of a genre-esque character parody as opposed to actually parodying the original source material, I think that's when you go into dangerous territory. And unfortunately, with Sprite comics, that's 99% of the thing. Because really, how do you parody the material in the Sonic games? Most of it is just running really fast. If you're going to parody the Sonic universe as a whole, then that's a different sort of thing. But also, the universe is really not even existent in the games. The games are mostly just running and reflexes.
Right.
You got the movie, I mean, the TV shows and the comic books and stuff like that. So if you're expanding the scope of the parody to a broader thing to match the scope of the thing that you're parodying, that's one thing. But if you're just stealing Sonic sprites because you're going to recolor them pink and say that it's your own original character, that's where you get in trouble. That's where you get bad reputations about different things. That's where the source material is no longer really even the source material for things except for what you're stealing. It's about whether you're
so
making...
Let me ask this. So have you guys been contacted by lawyers before for any issues?
No.
No.
Well, I'll tell you, I have. I've got it framed and on my wall because I was like, oh, I was big enough to be noticed for something. Yay. It was for using Reddit's logo in a comic, and they asked me not to. And the real lesson I learned that day is know your rights before it becomes an issue to make sure that when something comes up, you know how you'll deal with it before you have to. 'Cause in that day, it gets pretty tense, and you never know when it's gonna happen around the corner. And also, you know, choose your battles wisely, you know. I think that's exactly the lesson that Andy over at Waxy learned is sometimes it's worth it to fight, and sometimes it's worth it to live to fight another day. So with that, we'll move on. But there's plenty of articles out there, and we will link to a fair number of them over on this A Kind of Bloop Story. So check that out. Also, the album's pretty good, so check that out too. Okay, so the Denver Post cuts 13 comics from its comic section, and nobody seems to have cared. So, let's see. The total list. Doonesbury, Peanuts... No, sorry. Doonesbury and Peanuts were demoted to Sunday-only status. Bizarro, Brevity, Dustin, F-Minus, Fraz, Heart of the City, Nightlife, Non Sequitur, Overboard, Rhymes with Arge, and Scary Gary were all cut. And what survived was Beetle Bailey, Blondie, Dennis the Menace, Circus, Family Circus, Garfield, and Marmaduke. All of which, outside of Garfield, are the ones that stayed are at least 50 years old. And normally, there's been a backlash when something like this happens. In this case, no emails or significant feedback has been given to the Denver Post's editors about the switch. Nobody seems to have cared. Yeah.
I'm going to steal my own joke from earlier and go, I think the real story here is that they're still making newspapers.
Ooh. I don't know. I think this is a not with a shout, but with a whisper sort of thing.
Well, look at the comics that they picked. They're the blandest, least controversial, least likely to be... I mean, they may have been greats at one point in time, but those are comics that are essentially on autopilot at this point.
Yeah,
Now their comic section is on autopilot, because really the newspaper industry as a whole is on autopilot, gently coasting straight towards the ground.
Well, I think it says a lot about their target audience based on which ones they're keeping. I mean, they're clearly not going for a newer audience if all they're doing is showing the old stuff.
I mean, the most radical comic in that entire list is honestly Garfield.
Is the most what?
The most radical comic still on that, you know, still.
I don't know.
Is actually Garfield.
Blondie gets pretty deep, man. You don't know.
Blondie does own her own business.
Yeah, she owns her own business. He's always out making sandwiches and getting into shenanigans with his boss. Beetle Bailey, that old general keeps hitting on that secretary. I mean, that shirt got real, okay? Yeah.
Well, I think it also, the lack of outrage also speaks to the fact that the people who cared about those comics, because I am sure that there are probably people who had cared about those comics that read the Denver Post, but they have probably long since abandoned the Denver Post, or right. If they haven't abandoned it, are using it, you know, like using it in such a way that they can still continue. A lot of those comics are readily available on the internet,
right?
Through various different sources, and savvy comic readers picked up on that some time ago,
right?
So I think that it may be part of the not with a shout but with a whisper, maybe the fact that to the people who it really matters to, mm-hmm. they've already got this figured out.
All right. Well, we'll move on to some tidbits then. We mentioned last week that Gene Colan passed away. Great way to start off a newscast, wasn't it? A note that he left shortly before his death, it was signed to someone else, says, "Do what you love, do it every day, put all that you have into it, and all good and great things will follow. I love you all." Signed, Gene Colan. Isn't that nice?
Aww. That's very sweet.
Yeah, we'll take a sweet moment there. And now we'll move on to other things. There's an article on GigaOM with 3 tips for getting more done in fewer hours, which is always a problem for us webcomic artists. First of all, keep your deadlines challenging but realistic. Second, reward yourself for meeting deadlines. And third, stick to your deadlines but remain flexible. Do you guys have problems with productivity? I feel like I'm a walking problem with productivity.
Yeah, me too.
I'm amazed sometimes when I go back and look at the stuff that I've gotten done, that I've managed to get as much stuff done in as little an amount of free time as I have.
I gotta say, I have a very lucky problem right now, which is I'm a teacher and it's summer and I don't have much to do. And I thought, oh man, if only I had free time, I'd work on all these projects and I'd get them all done. I honestly think I got more done while, you know, during the semester when I was busy than I do now that I'm not. And I think it's very much speaks to this. I think the kind of structure of a doing a lot makes you work harder than when you have a lot of time. And they say in here about how, you know, when you have a project tends to fill up as much time as you give it. So sometimes it's better to trim down the amount of time you work on things. I think it's good advice to live by. Yay.
Yes.
All right. There's also a Gary Gygax memorial coming up. Not quite comics related, but we'll go with it. And they've
like an
just
actual
got
physical memorial.
A physical memorial. Yes, not just living in a dungeon somewhere, but an actual memorial. And they've just been given the space for it, and I'm looking for the actual location. Wisconsin, Lake Geneva, Wisconsin area. So that's step one. They obviously need to raise them a lot of money. There's a Gary Gygax Memorial Fund for those interested parties. You can go check that out. With that, we'll move on to the article that Alex and I think have been waiting to talk about, which is a video of Rob Liefeld on that he posted of himself driving at 6 a.m. while operating a camera to film himself while inking a comic all at the same time.
inking the comic on the steering wheel.
And I think his point is, look at how badass I am for doing this. And I think our point is, he's gonna die.
He's like, look at me. I'm on vacation and I'm inking while I drive. And I have a camera in my other hand.
Man, and, I so want him to keep doing this because I can't wait to read the story. Rob Liefeld dies doing what he loves, drawing, filming himself and inking and not driving enough. Sorry.
I think they should take it a different direction. I think that he should post a series of videos of him inking comics while doing other seemingly really complicated tasks.
Yeah, things like here I am, guys. Here I am. I'm pooping, and I'm inking this comic.
No. I'm talking about like skydiving.
Oh,
maybe running with the bulls in Pamplona.
Inking while doing epic things.
Yeah, just videos of him. Anything to slow him down on making more comics. Anything to distract. I mean, I'm fine with the spectacle as long as I gotta
call it out to our people in the Ustream room. I'm mopping the floor and inking comics. Thanks. nice tangent. Tangent 101 over there in the chat room. Thanks for tuning in. What are some other epic things Rob Liefeld could be doing? Oh, learning how to draw feet while inking comics. Putting less pouches on characters while inking comics.
Ooh, how about
learning about strong female characters while inking comics? Okay.
Rob Liefeld practically created the strong female character posture.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did indeed. All right. Well, anyway, go check out the video. It's amazing. It's on YouTube and it's linked from today's news post. Also mentioned brief, they're working on Angry Birds movie. It relates to comics because a former Marvel exec seems to be one of the people behind it. A person by the name of David Meisel? Whatever. They're just going to run Angry Birds into the ground, aren't they?
What people should do when they go read this article is go down to the comment section because somebody links to a video by the Rooster Teeth guys, the Red versus Blue guys.
Oh, nice. Oh,
with a fake movie trailer for Angry Birds, which is actually really funny.
Oh, it's got 6 million views. That's always a good sign. And there's an advertisement on YouTube. Yay. Okay, well, we'll move on to a hipster relaunch of DC characters that is apparently a meme going on DeviantArt right now. And there's a bunch from a person named callmepoe.deviantart.com. That has some cool ones. I gotta say, I'm a big fan of Dick Grayson, hipster Dick Grayson with a Vespa.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty great. Harley Quinn in a
like the Lolita.
Yeah, the Lolita outfit is pretty awesome with the the color coded pigtails. Selena Kyle with like the overdone sleeves. And the cat ears. Yeah. And just wearing cat ears.
Cat ears, yeah. And cat eye glasses.
Yep.
And,
yeah. Wow, I think I saw this in Columbia Heights last night. Anyway, those are pretty cool. Check those out. And finally, is this our last story of the day? It is our last story of the day. Hooray!
Dun, da, da, da.
Da, da, da. I don't know what song that was. Top 5 reasons it's effing awesome. Wait, does this show have the explicit tag? Can I say that? Anyway, top 5 reasons it's awesome to be a writer right now. Let's go through real quick and see which ones we feel applied to us. Number 1, you can work in your pajamas or in the nude.
Yes.
Yep. Adam?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. Number 2, with print on demand, anyone can publish a book. Have you guys done that?
Published not yet. Yep. I'm debating about it for a sci-fi comedy thing that I've been writing.
I'm working on it. I'm finally working on it.
I honestly probably did this too soon, but I did it.
At least you did it. Number 3, self-publishing gains momentum, the power is shifting from the big guys to the indie author / publishers. Yay.
I like the cartoon that goes with this one.
Yeah, the cartoon's cool.
Please come back.
Four, with the success of indie authors such as J.A. Conrath, Amanda Hocking, before she signed her book deal, Zoe Winters, H.P. Mallory, and many others, self-publishing is no longer shunned as it once was. If only doing a webcomic wasn't shunned as it once was. That'd be nice. And
I think
finally,
we'd have to be noticed to be shunned.
Right. And finally, the Amazon and ebook revolution.
That's take a nice. Drink.
Take a drink. So, yay. So that's happening. I think it is better to be an author now than probably ever before. That's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. So that's nice. That's all I have to say about that.
It's awful nice being an artist.
Yeah. Okay, well, this has been fun. Hasn't this been fun?
Oh, yes.
I mean, we covered lots of articles. We laughed. We cried.
We laughed. We loved.
We loved. We moved on with our day. So why don't we do just that? Thank you to all of... My God, what was that?
Sorry.
Thank you to all of you joining us in the chat room today. Marshmallow Kitty, Tangent 101. It was great to have you guys here. Please tell your friends to listen to the show. Follow along. We record every Sunday morning at 10:30 in the morning Eastern Time. And we record on Ustream. You can find us at ustream.tv/channel/webcast-beacon-network. Or just go to webcastbeacon.com and click on the recording live link. And with that, we will end the show. Thanks to Alex and Adam. Thank you guys both for being on. And of course, Eric for putting all of our stories together. You can find his work at exiern.com. And if you want to get in touch with us, find us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. So we hope you've enjoyed the show today. I know I've enjoyed hosting it, and I know that you guys enjoyed being on it, right?
Yay.
It's Sunday. Tomorrow's a holiday. It's cool.
Those who are listening live, stay tuned for the Tropecast, which will be starting in about 10 minutes.
What's the topic today?
We're covering guilty pleasures.
Yes.
Ooh. Sounds saucy.
Oh, yes.
So stay tuned for that. We hope you've enjoyed the show. We're always looking for feedback. Let us know. And as always, have a wonderful week. And peanut butter and jelly, everybody. See you next time. And we're off. Yay.
Cut and print.